The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Okay, we are joined by the Taoiseach and Fine Gael leader Leo Varadkar now. Minister or Taoiseach, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM. The first thing I have to ask you about is the news that we heard at 5 o'clock of a major COVID outbreak at Intel, where there's major construction work going on at present in Leixlip, County Kildare. 70 people having tested positive for COVID-19. In a situation like that, does a work site like Intel remain open or is it shut down?
Well, I don't think any one outbreak, even a significant outbreak, should cause us to change our plans. The same would apply to any one day's data. What you look at things, you look at them in the round and you look at trends. And, you know, we do see outbreaks in workplaces, in schools, in childcare facilities. Most of the outbreaks that we see are in private homes. So it's certainly concerning that there has been a significant outbreak. It is a very large site. The HSE is dealing with it at the moment. But I don't think in itself it would cause us to change our plans. And what we'll look at next week when we sit down to make a decision on May really is four things, and that is how are we doing in terms of the vaccine program, is it largely on schedule, how are we doing in terms of cases and the R number.
You mentioned that there are four things that you will be basing your decisions upon. One of those is obviously vaccinations. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you make today of the fact the National Immunisation Advisory Committee has deferred a recommendation on the use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine? I mean, do you really have time to be waiting for them to make a decision?
That wasn't a surprise. When it came to the decision on AstraZeneca, they had about three meetings and they'll want to review all the evidence and data. They'll want to see what's happening in other jurisdictions and then they'll give us their advice. So what they're indicating to us is that they'll give us advice sort of next week, and we're willing to wait until then. By then, we will have about 40,000 Johnson vaccines in storage. So hopefully we'll get the green light to use them, because they're a big part of what we need to do to meet that target.
What if you don't get the green light? I mean, is there not a danger here with this sort of abundance of caution, to use that phrase that's bandied around the place, that we could actually end up between AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson having an awful lot of vaccines left in storage, an awful lot of vaccines that people will say they don't want to take, that they want something else instead, and that will seriously undermine the potential for getting out of this crisis?
Well, I think, you know, in fairness to the members of NIAC and Professor Karina Butler, who heads NIAC, that they are aware of that. One of the reasons why they picked the age of 60 in relation to AstraZeneca, you know, when it would have been possible to pick 50 or even 30, as is the case in the UK, where 30 million of that vaccine has been given, is because there were enough vaccines available of the other types for the for people under 60. And one thing we'd wish to avoid would be a situation whereby we have four vaccines approved for the over 60s, but only two for the under 60s, and one of those being Moderna, for which supply is very scarce. So, you know, NIAC will be aware of that. The HSE will inform them of that. And I'm sure they won't want a situation whereby people are not vaccinated who could have been vaccinated. That's something we'll be keen to avoid.
You said something very interesting there. I mean, you mentioned 30 million doses of the AstraZeneca have been given in the UK. They haven't had a large number of blood clotting issues as a result of this. The numbers in relation to problems are absolutely tiny, and particularly by comparison with the risks of getting COVID and becoming seriously ill. I mean, does that not suggest that they are being excessively cautious and that there will be a price to be paid by the public for that excessive caution?
You know, I don't want to second guess the advice that they give. We do know that all of these vaccines are very safe. We know that they're all effective, close to 100% effective when it comes to preventing death or severe illness. And the decision that they made in relation to AstraZeneca, you know, was more conservative than that in most other countries, with the exception of Denmark. But they made that decision knowing that there were other vaccines available for the people under 60 to use. But that one of those vaccines was Johnson & Johnson, so the picture has changed a little. But, you know, they know all these things, and I would be surprised if they gave us advice next week that caused us to have hundreds of thousands of vaccines that we couldn't use. But that's a decision that they'll
would
make.
Would you reject their advice, Taoiseach? Because a lot of people are making the point, we don't elect advisors. We elect politicians like you, and then governments get formed. In other circumstances in which you and the government would turn around and say to the advisors, look, we appreciate why you're telling us this, we understand it, but we have to look at the bigger picture, and we say no.
Well, you know, government gets advice all the time from, you know, legal advice, expert advice, scientific advice such as this, and ultimately it is a decision for government, and there have been occasions on which we've gone against advice, and I've done it many times as the minister. So there are occasions when you do that. I think on this occasion, given the nature of a decision like this, government will be loath to go against expert advice. Because we would then be asking people to administer a vaccine that the government says you can, but the expert committee that the government set up said you can't. It's not that we couldn't go against their advice, but I think it's one of those occasions where you'd be extremely loath to, because you know, because of the reasons that I explained.
Okay, despite the fact that 30 million doses in the UK doesn't seem to have had any adverse effects.
Well, they have had adverse effects. You know, there have been over 200 clots in the UK. I don't know the number of deaths, very small number of deaths, but there have been, I think, 200, 270 clots. But again, that is out of 30 million doses, and they're doing very well.
And that compares to over 150,000 deaths from COVID-19 as well. So, if you
and
have
I think one thing that is important to say for, you know, people who are worried about this, you're actually more likely to get this particular rare clot from COVID itself than from the vaccine, never mind all the other things that COVID can do for you. So if you are offered any vaccine, I'd advise you to take it, but don't be afraid to ask any questions or seek any information that you feel you need.
What happens if you don't hit your target of having 80% of adults vaccinated by the end of June?
We still believe that target can be reached, and we're working towards reaching that target. That's, you know, 82% of people either being fully vaccinated or having their first dose or being offered their first dose. We still think that can be achieved.
But if it isn't, what's your contingency plan if it isn't? Because will that not impact on the ability to reopen society?
Well, the contingency obviously would be to... would be, if you miss a target, you set a new one, but you know, I hope we're not going to be in that space. When it comes to reopening the society and the economy, you know, of course the speed of the vaccine program impacts on that, and we'd all prefer if we were further ahead in this program than we are now, but it is only one of four factors, and you know, you could be doing very well in terms of vaccines and maybe not so well in terms of hospital capacity. There could be issues of variants. There could also be other issues too. So it is one of those four moving parts, if you like. If we fell a bit behind, I don't think it would be a disaster, but we'd rather be a bit ahead of it than a bit behind. There is one thing that could work in our favour, might not, but could work in our favour, and that's CureVac, a third mRNA vaccine that might be authorised in June, and that would help, and we haven't factored that into our plans at all.
Okay. A lot of people want to know, we were discussing it earlier in the programme, about the potential for foreign holidays, because this is all getting very confused. Transport Minister Eamon Ryan this morning said a number of months, but what constitutes a number of months? If you have 80% of people vaccinated by the end of June, would that mean that they could go on foreign holidays in July?
Well, they wouldn't be 80% fully vaccinated by the end of June. Unfortunately, people will not be fully vaccinated until between a week and 15 days after their second dose, unless they get the Johnson, of course, which would be 2 weeks after the single dose shot in that case. I think it's just too soon to give people an indication about foreign holidays. Non-essential travel outside of the state is still against the law. We do allow a certain amount of travel for essential reasons, but getting to the point where people can travel abroad to visit friends and relatives or go on a holiday, which we'd all like to do, and as somebody who represents West Dublin with a lot of people working in airlines and working in the airport, I'd like to see a return to aviation as soon as that's safe, but it's just too early to make that indication now. You know, it's only now, for example, that Israel, which is the most advanced in terms of its vaccine program, is talking about welcoming tourists, and they're talking about the end of next month. So I just think it's premature really for people to be making those kinds of plans, unfortunately.
Okay, this listener here wants to know about the plan for aviation for the likes of pilots and cabin crew, not just the airlines and airports. This listener says, I'm a 35-year-old pilot with two little girls under the age of three. I've had to twice decide this winter between food and heating my house. Twice in my lifetime, I've suffered through a recession and decisions taken by government officials. The impossibility of buying a house, €97,000 paid in rent in the last 6 years, and I still have to come up with a deposit of 10% to buy a house. Fed up, will be leaving this country permanently at the earliest opportunity. I know today you were facing a lot of questions in the Doyle as well about youth unemployment, which is exceptionally high. But there is a whole generation, it seems, of very upset people who wonder, when are they going to be able to get back to being able to earn a living?
Well, you know, I think that the vast majority of people will be able to go back to work in the next couple of months. There's a very good chance that over the course of May that we will fully reopen construction, retail and personal services. That's certainly the working plan at the moment. And then hospitality later in the summer in June or July. So, you know, the vast majority of people who are trying to get by in the pandemic unemployment payment at the moment, I would anticipate them being able to go back to work over the course of the next few months. And what's really important for us is that we don't open up too quickly. We want to make sure that when they reopen and go back to work this time, it's for good, and that we don't have to go back into a lockdown again. Nobody can rule that out, but that's obviously what we want to avoid. There are some particular sectors for whom it's going to be particularly difficult, and aviation and international travel is one of those. You know, even in countries that don't have as strict travel rules as we do, aviation is still down 70 or 80%. Unfortunately, there are very few airlines anywhere in the world that are recruiting pilots and cabin crew at the moment, and that's for the obvious reasons. But as you know, the European Union now has developed a plan, which is a digital green certificate, which will give people evidence, reliable evidence, that they have been vaccinated, that they're tested. And we believe that's going to allow us to open up travel within Europe. But that's not going to be in the next couple of weeks. That's going to be further down the line. And bear in mind, only very small parts of the world are going to be fully vaccinated this year. It really is just going to be Europe, the United States, Israel, some of the Gulf states, and a few small island states. That's about it. The vast majority of the world, including places like Australia and New Zealand, won't be fully vaccinated probably until the middle of next year. So we are going to see limitations on international travel for quite some time, unfortunately.
Okay. Economic recovery is something that a lot of people are now putting an awful lot of focus upon. And one of the reasons why, it's not just that people want to get out of lockdown in the coming weeks because they're bored with it or that they're frustrated by the limitations placed upon them. But there are many businesses and many jobs that are depending on getting things going again as quickly as possible. One of the things that you've announced today is a thing called the Disruptive Technologies Fund. What is that and what's that going to do for people?
Yes, so today I announced €95 million worth of funding for 29 partnerships, partnerships between Irish companies, small and medium-sized companies, many of them startups, and Irish universities. And essentially that funding is going to help them to develop new products and new services that will make our lives better and improve our lives. But crucially, if successful, will result in the creation of new jobs and new businesses, and hopefully some of them will go on to make very large profits, which we will get a share of, and that will help us to fund health and education and housing and all those things that are really important. It was originally set up by Richard Bruton when he was Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, and the whole idea really was for the government to get more involved in funding research and the commercialisation of research in particular. And sometimes that means that we're going to invest in projects that aren't going to succeed, but some of these, and it might only be a few of them, but some of them will go on to do really big things and be real success stories. And I think it's great that the Irish government is in a position to back our researchers, back our scientists, back our entrepreneurs, and help get these projects off the ground.
Okay, Tána Sílíofrácha, there's a number of listener comments and questions coming in that I want to get back to based on what we discussed earlier. And you were mentioning this traffic light system for the EU for foreign travel. Is this effectively something that you sort of mentioned before on this programme and then I think almost immediately wished that you hadn't? The idea of a vaccine passport, is this something that effectively is going to be coming into play, not necessarily just for travelling overseas, but to gain admission to various events, even here in Ireland, that people will have to prove that they've been vaccinated?
Well, the Digital Green Certificate is a European Union project, and it's working its way through the European system at the moment, the Commission and the Council and the Parliament and all of that. And what it's going to be is a reliable digital certificate that anybody in Europe can use to prove that they're vaccinated, prove that they've had COVID already, prove that they have had a recent COVID test. And it'll be up to member states to decide how they use that. But the whole idea is to have a safe and verifiable system that allows us to return to free movement and free travel within the European Union. It's not intended to be permanent. It would only be temporary, at least until the pandemic is behind us. But that it's hard to put a date on that at this stage. In terms of using it for anything domestically within the state, you know, we haven't made a decision on that, and we haven't given it any consideration or had any discussions about it.
Well,
in government.
Can I suggest things that maybe you might want it for? For example, if people wanted to go to concerts later in the year, say something like Electric Picnic at the start of September, or go to the All-Ireland Football and Hurling Finals at the end of August. I mean, could it be possible to allow even limited crowds into Croke Park on the basis of the production of a digital green cert proving that somebody's been vaccinated?
It's not impossible, and it'll be useful to have this technology available. There is a big difference, I think, between outdoor gatherings and indoor gatherings. And bear in mind, it might be the smaller indoor gathering of 20 or 30 people crammed into a poorly ventilated room that is the bigger risk than a stadium. You know, Whelan's might be a higher risk, for example, than the Aviva. But, you know, we're nowhere near opening any of those things at this stage. There are countries that are doing this. Israel has done it with their Green Pass. Denmark is planning on doing it now, allowing people to access certain personal services if they prove they're vaccinated. But I don't want to speculate that too much on your show. Like, it's
don't you need to have this
about,
as an ambition? Isn't this sort of an ambition that the government has to have to try and restore as much normal life for people as possible, to give them the potential to actually go and do the everyday things, even if it's restricted, at least it's better than nothing?
You're right. But the ambition of government, for example, is to allow people to do all these things without having to produce evidence of vaccination. So, for example, the plan for May or the working plan for May is the restoration of personal services and retail without having to show that you've been vaccinated. Denmark, for example, is taking a different view. It's saying that hairdressers are only open to people who are vaccinated. You know, we would rather open things up for everyone than make a distinction between people who are vaccinated and those who are not, with the exception of international travel, for reasons you'll understand. I'm not ruling it out as something that we may use down the line, and I agree with your premise that it would be better to give some people freedom than nobody freedom, but you know, we just haven't teased that through yet in government or had any detailed discussions about it, and I wouldn't like to, you know, create the impression that we had or be seen to be flying a kite that I'm not flying at all.
Okay, look, next week, will you be able to give us some sort of much more strong indication as to, well, or just pure facts as to things like when we'll be able to go on a domestic holiday, when hotels can open, when pubs and restaurants can open, when people can have larger numbers at weddings and funerals and things like that? I mean, are you going to be able to give us specifics at the end of next week?
Yeah, that's the plan. That we'll make a decision next Thursday or Friday on foot of NPHET advice. We'll set out very clearly what will reopen across the course of May, and then we'll give an indication, a reasonable indication as to what will happen then in June and July. So, you know, we did do what we said we would do in February and March, which was the phased return to school and to childcare. And we have done what we said we would do in April, which was the removal of the 5K rule, residential construction, allowing some outdoor sports and activities like golf and tennis. So, you know, we have stuck to that plan, that revised plan, since we published it back in February. And the next iteration of that now is exact detail at the end of next week as to what is going to be allowed in May, and then a reasonable indication as to what will happen in June and July.
Thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.